V-minus 65. RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. After a first half segment that was so comfortable for Dan that comfort almost turned to frustration, he was looking forward to finally saying everything that was pent up inside him and everything that he hoped would halt the rapid escalation in international tensions that had followed the Zanzibar Triangle's discovery. The primary tack Emma had suggested was one whose efficacy Dan didn't doubt, but that didn't mean it was one he was completely at ease with. In short, she had essentially told him that the only way to reduce the focus on GCC ELF divisions, and indeed to reduce the GCC and ELF's focus on each other, was for Dan to position himself above both organizations, acting as a lightning rod by publicly and firmly reminding everyone that he was the only person alive with whom the messengers had ever initiated direct contact. John Cole's departure, no doubt strategically planned because of his famed inability to handle direct criticism or even arguments, was actually something Dan was glad about. He didn't want a two-way fight with a slippery customer like Cole on live TV any more than Cole wanted a fight with someone sitting next to Emma Ford and her famously keen mind for one-liners and quick rebuttals. When the show returned to the airwaves, Marion de Klerk very briefly recapped what had been covered in the first segment, reintroduced the panel with an understandably prolonged camera shot of Dan, and invited GeoSov spokesperson Poppy Bradshaw to say her piece. Poppy was a complete unknown, who even Emma had been unable to pin down and identify before the show began and her name was announced. She looked to be around 40 and was well turned out without looking like much effort had been made, and there was an air of calm about her that suggested media experience of one kind or another. On the topic of this stupid triangle, the biggest question we have to address is the question of the aliens' motives, Poppy said. They tried to fool humanity with the third plaque, so we know they have a history of messing us around. And all of this destabilizing uncertainty over the meaning and intent of a message is precisely why we should reject contact. By its very nature, contact is divisive. And we have Mr. Divisive sitting there in Birchwood, no doubt ready to hippocratically lecture us all from his ivory tower. But they've spoken exclusively to him, which is the absolute opposite of openness. We already know the aliens are all about favoritism, and there would definitely be more than a hint of irony if their new favorite contactees turn out to be the designated bad guy leaders of the ELF. That doesn't even make sense, Dan said. Poppy grinned from ear to ear. What makes no sense is humanity listening to the views of someone who is almost certainly a Trojan horse. The aliens changed you, Dan. If that even is the name of your internal identity anymore. The real Dan McCarthy would never dismiss any so-called conspiracy theory out of hand without at least giving it a fair hearing. There's not even a theory here, Dan retorted, disbelieving of how inane and insane a turn the conversation had taken so quickly. If you're trying to pretend to be smart, it's not working, because everyone can see through this tired old crap. Dan, your own government doesn't even trust you. Why else would they have implanted a chip under your skin to monitor the neck pain they expect you to feel if there's any future contact? Stunned that Poppy could know this, Dan's lips and mind were frozen. Emma typed two words, deny quickly. It's almost like you don't want anyone to take you seriously, he said after several uncomfortable seconds, forcing out a fairly convincing chuckle. We both know that isn't a baseless accusation. Poppy shrugged. And everyone else will know it soon, too. This is an accusation that can be proven or disproven whenever you want, Dan. How about tomorrow? Will you consent to some public scans? Dan read aloud the words Emma hurriedly typed on his auto-cue. What are you trying to distract from? This is a textbook play of say something stupid to distract from something secret. What's the dirt? There is a chip in your neck, Poppy yelled. That's the dirt. It was placed there by human agents, American agents, and that is a cast iron fact. The only thing I don't know for absolutely certain is whether it's in there because American agents think you're an alien operative, which is what I think, or alternatively, because you're secretly colluding with US and GCC agents. People have thrown a lot of crazy accusations at me these past few years, Dan sighed, not needing any auto cue for this. Or at least I thought they had. But seriously, Poppy, if all that was crazy, I don't even know what to call this. Poppy turned to her fellow panelists, both of whom were intrigued by Dan's long silent views and declined to jump in. She shrugged and looked back to the screen. Dan, you're using the exact silencing techniques they used to use against you, she said, throwing her hands up in an exasperation that was either real or incredibly convincing. Right on cue, here comes the laughter curtain, and in just a second I'm sure Billy and Joe will jump to your defense. But what was it you used to say, Billy, back when you were an underdog rather than an establishment lackey? Oh yeah, that's right. Consensus is collusion. And everyone watching this who has an open mind can see where the collusion is. We are the underdogs, fighting for a sovereign planet that can live in peaceful harmony, free from the reach of interfering aliens who see us as playthings at best, and probably see us in a way that's a lot more sinister than that. The clerk signaled Dan's right of reply. You know, I reluctantly support giving these idiots a platform, he said. Bad ideas fester and spread in the dark, but they get exposed in bright light, exactly like a lot of smarter people than me have said in the past. I was ridiculed back in the day, but it went beyond that. Some people tried to silence me, and other people supported it because they thought I was crazy. So banning anyone from speaking, even the Geosovs, would set a dangerous precedent. Because if you don't support free speech for people and ideas you hate, you don't support free speech at all. Maybe something could or should be done about the paid ads the Geosovs have used to target kids with anti-contact memes because kids are garbage, Poppy interrupted. No such thing has ever been proven to have come from an official Geosov account. Dan tried not to let any annoyance show. As I was saying, kids are kids, but this kind of situation, for me, is clear. This is a current affairs show for adults, and no positions should be banned on principle. In the political sphere, if all speech isn't free, then no speech is free. At best, it would be conditionally free for now, until someone in an office somewhere might decide that it offends their sensibilities and has to go. I hate these people, but they should be allowed to speak. Dan, hate is a strong word for a man with such a warm and cuddly public image, Poppy mocked, shaking her head indignantly. I despise you, he hissed in reply. I detest you. You and your people tried to kill Timo and Emma, and the one good reason you shouldn't be on this panel is that you should be in prison. Poppy began to reply, but De Klerk promptly stepped in with a firm insistence that Dan had agreed to come on the show with the intention of talking about more than the Geosovs. She, of course, had no idea just what Dan was planning to reveal about the Geosovs themselves later in the show, but for now she had heard more than enough from Poppy Bradshaw. The floor is yours, Dan, the clerk announced. The Zanzibar Triangle's discovery coming on the anniversary of Contact Day has raised all kinds of questions, and the precise timing, during the GCC's inauguration, has proven just as controversial. No one can come at this from either side with a more complete perspective than you, so please, let us into your mind. The first thing I want to say is that there aren't really two sides here, Dan began, following Emma's advice to hit the political nonsense first. The way I see it, there are three sides. There are a bunch of politicians in Beijing, there are a bunch of politicians in Buenos Aires, and there are 7 billion people who wish those politicians would all get together, join hands, and jump into the nearest volcano. So let's all try to keep that in mind when we're talking about sides. And just quickly on that, this isn't even about normal politics. The sides these politicians have created in their own minds are so binary, but again, only in their own minds, that John Cole, a hardline Western conservative, is going to live in Cuba, where they're probably going to treat him like a king. This is a return to the old Cold War logic of my enemy's enemy is my friend, if you can even call it logic. Appearing surprised by both the strength of Dan's opening comment and the direction he had moved in, De Klerk pushed him back in the direction she wanted the discussion to go. But of the two bunches of politicians, as you put it, which do you see as the more legitimate in their claims to represent humanity as a whole? Neither, he insisted, and that's the whole point. I see what you're getting at, though, so I'll say this. While I will never formally endorse the GCC or the ELF, what I will do right now is unreservedly condemn the ELF's leadership, Ding Ziyang and now apparently John Cole, for the pathetically divisive rhetoric they spouted earlier today. It reminded me of the posturing during the IDA leak, when Cole and Godfrey were on the same side and were more concerned about making President Slater's life difficult than they were about the contents of the leak. And I know for a fact that Godfrey didn't even think the leak was real at first. He just jumped at the opportunity to get one over on Slater and distract from his own problems. Obviously, we all found out that it wasn't real in the end, but the point is that Godfrey pretended like he believed me long before he actually did, and purely because it was politically expedient to do so. And now, with this triangle, Dan went on, you have Ding telling us with one breath that it's the most important thing ever, but then what does he do with the next 10 breaths? Makes it about the same old pointless political games and his stupid power struggle with Godfrey. That's one thing I want to clarify, in fact. I don't hate China. Of course I don't. But I bet most people there like Ding about as much as I do, which is about as much as I like Slater. That's the point. This isn't China equals bad any more than it's America equals bad or even Britain equals bad, since Godfrey is still such a big part of things. This is tails wagging dogs with great nations being led by petty children. And regarding the triangle itself, de Klerk probed, trying to move things along while staying out of the way as much as possible. Do you mean what do I think of its origin and what do I think should happen next? De Klerk nodded. Precisely. I'll start with the second point, he said, always cognizant of how crucial Emma had told him it was to save the revelation of his recent contact experience and the clue regarding the triangle's markings until near the end, leaving just enough time to close with the revelation of the GeoSov plot that President Slater had given him permission to expose. If you wish, de Klerk said, holding out a palm to encourage him along. Okay, well, I'm not in a position to make any formal declarations, Dan said, but if Ding Ziyang and John Cole don't share access to the Zanzibar Triangle within the next few days, I will be prepared to make a very firm suggestion of what the leaders of the other ELF nations and the citizens of all ELF nations should do in an effort to convince them to change their minds. And whether Cole in particular likes it or not, my word carries a lot of weight among real people with real lives, from Birchwood all the way to Beijing. You're half right, Dan, Poppy interjected. You're not in a position to make any formal declarations, so you're correct there, but you're also not in a position to make any requests of anyone. Proactive contact is a foolish road for humanity to take, and it leads only to ruin and regret. But one thing that can at least be said of the GCC and ELF is that they're composed of people who one way or another rose to positions of national authority. But you, you're just a gullible fool from nowhere, Colorado, who fell for a hoax and dragged the rest of us into it. There wouldn't even be any talk of contact if you hadn't done what— None of us would be alive if I hadn't done what I did, Dan snapped defensively. But we all know that's exactly what you and your demented welcomer friends would have wanted, so you can just spare us all the crap and keep your mouth shut. He immediately took a deep breath, scolding himself for taking the bait. Blame apportioning talk of the hoax had long been his primary sore spot, and Poppy almost certainly knew this. De Klerk stopped short of admonishing Dan directly, but did issue a general call for civility. And I wasn't requesting that they grant open international access to the triangle, Dan continued. Request isn't the word. So everyone everywhere, if you're looking for a headline on what I'm saying about this triangle, here it is. This isn't a request, it's a demand. Ding, Cole, and everyone else at the ELF, open up the scientific analysis just like Argentina did with the sphere, or my words are going to get a lot firmer and your lives are going to get a lot more difficult. A demand? Poppy scoffed. So tell us, almighty one, who exactly put you in a position to make— I'm the only one the messengers talk to, Dan interrupted. Out of 7 billion people, I'm the one. We're talking about a triangle here. Well, how about thinking about a contact triangle? There's the GCC, there's the ELF, and there's me. Two of the sides don't even matter. The messengers have used one point of contact, and we all know which of the three it is. Poppy raised a hand and repeatedly opened and closed it in a dismissive blah, blah, blah gesture. I'm not even talking to you, Dan said just as dismissively. I'm talking to Godfrey and Slater, to Ding and Cole, and I'm telling them this. You can have your little contact clubs and keep fighting over countries like they're tiles on a board if that's how you want to spend your lives. But the truth none of you want to hear is that this is a game you can't win. And do you want to know why? Because when the messengers want to contact Earth, they don't call Beijing and they don't call Buenos Aires. They call Birchwood. They contact me. And all you can do about that is learn to deal with it. It's not going to change if one of you wins and ends up in charge of an organization that really is global or really does represent Earth, because the messengers still won't want to talk to any scheming politicians. Very suddenly, and without so much as a knock, Clark then burst through the door so quickly that he almost fell into the room. Dan didn't think anything he'd said came close to meriting an intervention, much less one so far from Emma's approved method of a text to her phone, but Clark's face and body language were testament to the urgency of whatever he had to say. In a million years, Dan could never have guessed the words that came next.
"They just found another triangle," Clark panted. "Vanuatu. It was on the trend tracker and it's on every other station. De Klerk's bound to mention it at any second now, as soon as she hears."
Instinctively, Emma's hand had already hit a button on her computer's keyboard that muted Dan's microphone and blacked out the camera feed. She pointed to the door and firmly mouthed for Clark to get out, pointing at the computer to remind him that Dan was currently going out live to an international audience well into the hundreds of millions.
"You just heard it on the trend tracker and our internet glitched," Emma said, slightly unnervingly effortless in the lie. "And you think maybe there was a spike because of the news, and no one is going to query it, so just say that. And Dan, whatever you do, don't commit either way on this. Don't say what you were going to say about the first triangle being real, okay? Not now. Vanuatu sounds too convenient to be real, but it almost sounds too convenient to be fake, if you know what I mean."
"I know exactly what you mean," he said, nodding for Emma to press the button to reactivate their outgoing broadcast. As soon as he returned to screens around the world, and also the giant screen in the Focus 2020 studio, Marion de Klerk turned her attention to Dan.
"Did you see it, Dan?" she asked. "The second triangle."
In his focus on Clark and Emma, Dan had missed the moment when de Klerk heard the news and passed it on. He stuck rigidly to Emma's suggested line about the trend tracker and internet surge, also sticking to her advice to leave all speculation at the door. Dan was running on autopilot, adrenaline taking over and Emma's typed words the only thing keeping him afloat. His mind was a confused mess, but so was everyone else's. Billy Kendrick and Joe Crabb looked bemused by what they were hearing secondhand via de Klerk, while Poppy Bradshaw appeared to find the whole thing extremely amusing. Poppy's expression, which she seemed to be trying to conceal, told most of the world once and for all that she and her GeoSaw friends didn't oppose contact so much as they craved chaos. Marion de Klerk did a laudable job of listening for incoming details of a remarkable and ongoing global happening while trying to stumble through the last few minutes of the show. The unexpected development meant that this show would no longer feature the revelation of a GeoSov plot to take President Slater hostage or anything whatsoever about the vision in which the messengers had warned Dan of the plot and also confirmed in hindsight their prescient knowledge of the first triangle. Whether the messengers were back or something fishy was going on in Vanuatu, having already swept across from Zanzibar as one perfectly timed discovery followed another, Dan was glad he had spoken out about his views on the GCC-ELF split. He spoke again a handful of times as de Klerk and even Poppy fired difficult questions at him, and he managed to dissociate, as Emma's auto-cue suggested, and focused on making it through some of the most difficult few minutes of his life by reading exactly what she wrote. If Dan's mind had been clear in the slightest, he would have wondered how Emma could remain so unflustered, but in that moment, clarity of mind felt as out of Dan's reach as the power of flight. As the ticker counted down and Dan realized he wasn't going to have to speak again, he breathed a deep sigh of relief. Without his contextualizing words, intended to disempower Buenos Aires and Beijing's dual grip on public consciousness, he expected that this second triangle would have catastrophically ignited the gunpowder spilled by the first. Coming just minutes after John Cole's mention of a soon-to-open ELF office in Vanuatu and his now suspicious halftime departure, it was difficult not to jump to the obvious conclusion. Because even after his attempts at sweeping the gunpowder away, Dan knew that Vanuatu was simply too much of a coincidence to dismiss out of hand. He knew the messengers were close. The Slater-saving vision told him that. But he didn't know what they were playing at. If this was them, they had to stop. And if it wasn't, they had to let him know. Without knowing what was happening, Dan was back to experiencing his least favorite feeling in the world. Powerlessness. As de Klerk signed off in a far less attentive manner than normal, Dan instinctively scratched the back of his neck.
"Where the hell are you?"